in Europe. And he had a story to tell me, and that was quite amusing. He said that in his little village in Sudan, a UFO comes periodically and lands in his village. About every 5 years, he had seen it on a previous visit, and it's taken quite normally by the tribesmen in his village. And every 5 years, they meet each other, exchange gifts, shake hands, and they drive off after a short visit. And, you know, I mentioned this to a lot of people and said, hey, if somebody wants to see a flying saucer, they should spend 5 years in Sudan, and they probably will. But no takers.
No takers on that one. Speaking of uneducated people who've seen them, Jimmy Carter, well-documented episode when he saw one.
Oh, yes, I have a lot of the press releases that Jimmy Carter made when he was governor and promised as part of his platform that when he's elected president, he would reveal the entire UFO cover-up to the American public.
Well, that ended that.
Well, he never did, and it saddened a lot of the UFO enthusiasts, but, you know, there are reasons for everything, and the reason, looking back, has to be that the technology of the UFO being so exciting and far advanced was tried to be held proprietary by those people who were looking into the matter. And you do have decades now of virtual silence from the establishment on anything positive about UFOs. But my comment is, having traveled to the other side of the world, you have the exact situation in the Russian camp.
They're operating under the same rule book.
Same rule book. Very active underground research, quiet, secret research. Many, many observations, many eminent scientists involved with it. The Academy of Sciences and Felix Zygel is over there, and very good scientists in charge who say nothing to the public that's very meaningful, but you know that there's great interest on both sides for obvious reasons.
From the crashed ones or the retrieved ones, there's a treasure trove of technology if we can just figure it out.
Well, absolutely.
And so we're trying. We're going to get to our callers here in just a moment. Let me give you the numbers again. In Los Angeles, 5 to the UFO. We'd be glad to talk to you. Edwin Slade is here. We'll be back in a moment.
This is
Edwin Slade, and see what's on your mind. And just keep it on the UFOs. We have Brian on the line. Brian, welcome aboard.
Good evening, Ed and Bill. I had two main questions to ask. The first one is about the UFO's propulsion system. Could Ed comment on that?
I'd love to. What's your question?
I'll tell you a little bit what I think about it. I think that electromagnetics has a part in their propulsion system, and that they expound great amounts of electromagnetic energy. And the Air Force, I'm sure, knows about this. And that it's a lot of times it's in the microwave region of the spectrum. Could you comment on that?
Well, yes. Great thought has been put to the propulsion system. And I can tell you from my own investigations that there's a lot of possibilities here. I would think the primary power plant is probably atomic fusion. And I can tell you why I think that. One of the most energetic reactions in the world is if you collide two nitrogen atoms together. And technically that would be N14 plus N14. That would give you magnesium-24 as the ash, and helium as the combustion product, the fusion product. And it's a very interesting reaction because nitrogen is plentiful, and that reaction gives 17 million electron volts per collision, which is enormous. And operating in the atmosphere, you could scoop up nitrogen and fuse it and get all the energy you need. In fact, I figured out once that a 10-foot sphere of air would get you up and back to the moon 30 times just based on energy consideration. And so the primary plant could be fusion, and there's a lot to support that. If you have such a plant, you're going to get radiomagnetic byproducts. And a lot of victims who've gone and reported they've been near these craft when they were under power, did get a microwave type of injury, and there's many, many reports like that. So, yes, you know, the fusion secret is a secret that's sought after, and all the fusion research going on is very much influenced by UFO data. There's the Project Sherwood that was going on for many years doing fusion in Princeton, and the fusion research in Russia is the Tokamak Project, both of which I think were inspired by UFO type of reports.
There's another technology that they could use. People that listen to this program probably know about T. Henry Morey's technology that he developed that was able to produce large amounts of electrical energy and very small, compact type of space. He could produce large amounts of electrical energy. They from the information that I've gathered up there, they produce enormous amounts of electromagnetic energy, and from calculations and things like that I've read about, just in a hovering mode, they're producing as much energy as a diesel locomotive can produce easily.
Yes, there are these technological advances, and I'd like to just say something that should be said. There has been published reports that it takes enormous amounts of energy to do the UFO mission.
Mm-hmm.
And the Condon report that was issued by the U.S. government said that. And it's not necessarily true, because if you figure out the minimum energy to do a mission, and you mention the hovering mode as one mission, that doesn't take any energy, and you could prove that thermodynamically. But it's a miracle. I mean, you take a 30-ton UFO and you make it hover, and it doesn't cost any energy. Now, how do you do that? Well, that's the secret that...
That's the million dollar question.
Yes, that secret hasn't been published, and if it's discovered, it hasn't been mass-produced. So you could say that the secret is still a secret, and there's no real device that captures that secret and exploits it yet.
There is also something else, too, that's uncanny about their ability, is that there's, of course, other things involved in this, is their ability to fly through the air at great, tremendous speeds and not create sonic booms.
It's interesting you mention that, because my background is very strong in that particular subject, and that is a wonderful mystery, because whenever you take a ponderable object and put it through a fluid or gas, you do create a shock wave if you exceed the sonic velocity. In the case of UFOs, this doesn't happen. The only conclusion you can draw from that is that there's a force around the UFO which opposes the air molecules.
Yes.
and pulls them back into where the original position, so they don't start a sonic boom. And that force is not clearly understood. It's really a puzzle, and it's an unsolved puzzle at this point.
It may indeed have something to do with their propulsion system.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. It would have to, because it would, you know, when you make a sonic boom, you waste a lot of energy. And not being able to make sonic booms and disturb the air would be a great benefit.
You know, the fusion idea is certainly supported, I think, by a story we have right there in front of us that came out of the Soviet Union, and looking at the great blast in Siberia in the early part of the century, which was an atomic explosion.
The famous Tunguski crater in Siberia. Oh, yes, much has been written about that. Bill, I know you're referring to something most of our readers know something about, but there was an enormous explosion in the early 1900s in Siberia, fortunately, and trees were knocked down for 20, 30 miles, and the sound was heard for 200 miles. And the Russian literature says that 1908 explosion may have been caused by an explosion of an extraterrestrial visitor's power plant that went bad and exploded, because their eyewitnesses saw the trace of the vehicle going upwards before the explosion. So it wasn't a meteorite coming downwards.
Yeah.
And there is radioactivity in the forests, Still.
Still today.
The second question that I wanted to ask.
I want you to make it very quick.
Yep.
We have a lot
yep.
of people here.
Is could you tell us anything about their metals technology? Obviously, that they have, they're very not only highly advanced in physics, but they're very highly advanced in metals technology, too.
The metals technology is truly wondrous, and I would like to answer that. Eyewitness accounts have said that the vehicle is a silvery color. There have been eyewitnesses who've touched the vehicle, and when you touch it, it seems to ripple like mercury. The metal is like fluid, but it's a metal. It also has another property when the energy is turned on and the power plant starts up, that at different times the metal becomes transparent, so you could see through the metal into the cabin. At other times, it's metallic and you cannot see through. Conversely, there have been human eyewitnesses from the inside of the UFO who say at certain times in a power cycle they could look out and see the world uninterrupted by the metal. And it's an amazing thing.
Is it true the Air Force has a sample of some of these metals and they can't figure it out, period?
Well, now you're getting into touchy ground. Is it true? If you ask the Air Force, you'll get an answer.
Yes, of course.
The Russians would like to know the answer, too. I can tell you there's been many published affidavits that people have made saying that vehicles have crashed and that the remains were recovered.
Yes.
And they were stored in various locations in the United States. Yes, that's been published, and I would comment on a report like that. The more important thing here is in looking at the technology, it's apparent that the eyewitness human accounts of this technology is really beyond our present understanding.
Yes, still very far beyond.
My comment, however, is that if you look at the atomic structure of metal with a nucleus and a few electrons, it seems logical that light would go through the open spaces very easily. A photon being so tiny would go through a metal, and it's more logical to think that a metal is transparent than it is opaque. So it's to a scientist, it's not unbelievable that metals can be transparent.
Yes.
Okay, Brian.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your questions. We'll be back with more. Edwin Slade in just a moment. About UFOs, and we are talking to, where are we? Jerry, right now. We're talking to you.
All right, Jerry. I mean, Bill.
Yeah.
You got to have a longer program or a shorter speaker, one or the other, because we got a lot of questions we want to ask this man, and we can't get on soon enough.
We're trying to get a longer program.
I hope so. Okay, my question is this. Since your guest believes in UFOs, or at least it sounds like he does, I assume he probably does believe that beings, or resurrected beings, could travel a distance and do the same thing. And my question is this. He made a comment at the top of the hour, at the beginning of the show, that Angel Moroni had visited Joseph Smith, and because of the brightness of his garments, or the brightness of him, it reflects along that line. He made a mistake, and I think he did, and I want to correct it for him.
We know he did, yes.
Angel Moroni was a male,
right,
and not a female. And secondly, I do concur with him on many things he said tonight. I also wish to say that there's a city of Enoch. Now, he has talked about a gentleman that has gone to a city. They think he's gone somewhere out there in the heavens. And I am, of course, a firm believer that the city of Enoch does exist and was lifted off this earth and does exist out there in the heavens. What does he know about that? And how does he feel about that?
Well, I have to agree with you, Ed. You missed our intermission where I said, oh, my goodness, I had the wrong gender to the angel, and I only did that because I was thinking of the muses. I'm well aware that Moroni was male, and I did correct myself to Bill privately. I said I'm...
That he did.
I'm sure we're going to get a question on that, and it's terrible, but it's one of those unfortunate slips. Cities in the sky is an interesting subject. I don't have any intelligence of the city of Enoch to give you, but the city of the New Jerusalem is mentioned in Revelations, and if you read the text, it claims that... at the end of the world, this city will descend upon Jerusalem and save the righteous people. and then depart.
He was there before. He was there during the time of the garden.
Do you believe that this friend of, or the person that you were talking about earlier in the program could be in that city possibly?
Well, you know, the questions of whether there is a unique city or many cities is unanswered. I feel from the evidence that there are many such cities because they seem...
I agree with you.
They seem to have different languages, different cultures, different city, different histories, different parts of the population are acquainted with them. I think there are several cities... that's my opinion.
All right, let me make this last statement because there's hundreds of people waiting for you. If you read the Book of Mormon, it's in that book and it covers that. And I thank you for your guest, Bill.
Jerry, thank you for your call. Appreciate it very much. You know, you'll find Hillshire. We have Jeff on the line. Jeff, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, I'd like to speak about my theory on UFOs and a little bit about the fact that, okay,
I want you to make it very quick.
Your guest has been talking a lot about how the American government is covering up a lot of this stuff. It seems to me that us Westerners are really very ignorant to a lot of things that are going on as far as psychic phenomena. Now, what I'd like to say is, for the past 4 years, I've been experiencing a very new phenomena. I don't know if your guest has heard about it. It's called astral projection. And this phenomena can be reached through meditation.
We just were talking about it with the Monroe Institute a second ago.
Okay. Now, do you think, through your travels, have you experienced or heard anything on the subject of, through meditation, being able to get in touch with these beings? Do you, from what I understand, astral projection is a phenomenon of vibrating your fluid body, which is inside your physical body, at a level quick enough to communicate with these UFOs.
Jeff, it's a great question, and I'd love to talk all night on the subject. Let me give you the answer you're looking for. In the ancient Zohar, which I mentioned, which is a kind of companion to the Bible, it's Adam's story that was given to him by Gabriel on the history of the world. There's a chapter dealing with that question. And it says that at midnight, precisely at midnight, the angels fly over the earth and collect all the thoughts of the sleeping people below. And they do it at that time because in the Zohar it says people who are dreaming cannot lie. And the angels collect the true thoughts of each person and relay that information to God. And that is how God knows the true state of the world.
Yeah.
Now that's such an ancient commentary that it bears directly on your question. If you consider the brain as an electric transmitter of a very low intensity, it's possible that brainwave signals can be transmitted to the heavens. And it's also possible that a device could collect those thoughts. And it's also possible they could be relayed intergalactically by radio buoys or sons in the sky.
Yeah.
And it's possible that someone is listening.
Right.
You could monitor the mass consciousness of the world that way.
Now, what about the phenomena of astral projection or the phenomena of soul travel, which they study in India? Now, if you are familiar with the science of Ekankar, they believe that if you vibrate at different levels and tune your mind into certain sounds or something, you can vibrate your spiritual body quick enough to get to these different levels. And as far as Ekankar is concerned, which is the Tibetan ancient study of soul travel, they believe that on the astral plane, which is the lowest plane and the closest plane to the physical plane, that through meditation, you can get to that next plane. Do you think these... Now, through my experiences, you didn't want to talk about sightings, but through astral projection, I have gone to the astral plane through meditation and have seen UFOs, which Ekankar also believes they exist at that level. Now, do you believe that they can vibrate quick enough and slow down that vibration of the atoms to disappear and,
move interdimensionally, you're saying?
Right.
Well, let me comment in the following way. If you consider the brain as a transmitter, then you can transmit, and by self-thought, I think you can alter your transmitter to do different things. And I think that if someone is listening on certain frequencies, they could also beam signals back. And I think the brain could be a receiver as well. So, in answer to your question, the analysis of the brain as a radio transmitter allows for all of these possibilities. However, we're at a point now where we're getting insight into it, but we haven't really documented these things in a very reproducible way that can be commercialized and exploited. Certain people are getting closer to the secret. It's a very exciting and interesting subject, and I would not dismiss it.
But do you think that's one of the closest theories to the secret?
Then
being so materialistic about it?
I think...
Well, do you think that's part of what the government is trying to hide?
Well, there are a lot of researchers that believe that they do move interdimensionally, if that is one thing. This space frame into an next one.
I tend to think that this is a Pandora's box. Once you admit that there's a UFO, you have to admit there's a pilot. Once you admit there's a pilot, you have to consider where he comes from. Then you have to consider what he's doing and what his mission is. Now you look at his tools and then you look at his technology, and it goes on and on and on into a Pandora's box that is so exciting that it could go on forever. It's really a subject that you can penetrate
right.
So many ways.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's one of the major researches, right?
They're trying it, certainly, sure. In all of that.
Right.
And I think the official position is to play down all of the speculation and business as usual. And
keep your mind on the Olympics and other things.
Keep your mind on fun and games, really, because it's very deep and very provocative. I just allow what's allowable under our scientific knowledge, and that is, you study things that are possible.
Okay, Jeff, listen. Jeff, we've got to go. Appreciate the questions. They were very good. And we'll be right back with Edmund Slate.
All right, how are you tonight?
Got Jimmy Carter on your mind,
right? Right, yes. I'm really not familiar with the subject at all. And when I heard about the Jimmy Carter incident, I have no idea what that was about. And I'm really interested in hearing about
that. Well, you just came to the right place.
Okay.
Yes, our former president certainly saw a flying saucer. Go ahead there, Ed.
Well, I have a copy of Jimmy Carter's report to NICAP that he made when he was governor, and it's interesting, he made the report on September 18, 1973. He says here that his occupation is governor. His special training is in nuclear physics, the U.S. Navy. He says that he made the sighting, however, many years before. Date of observation, October 1969. And the locality was in Leary, Georgia, shortly after dark, and it goes on to say that it was as bright as the moon, and there was only one object, and it's a rather lengthy NICAP standard report where the object was sharply outlined and about the same size as the moon, maybe a little smaller, varied from brighter than the moon to apparently the size of the moon, and 10 to 12 men all watched it, and he was outdoors waiting for a meeting to begin at 7:30, and it goes on and on.
Oh, my God.
A very interesting thing, and part of, he signed it here on 9/18/73, and his quote during the campaign was, "I'll make every piece of information that this country has about UFO sightings available to the public. I am convinced that UFOs exist because I have seen one." Unquote. Now, there are a lot of people who wrote letters to Jimmy Carter and said, please don't tell us about UFOs, but I'm sorry that nothing really came publicized as a result.
Well, he had a change of heart, similar to Saul of Tarsus on his way to Damascus.
Exactly.
Yes, once he became president of the United States and
exactly.
had to confront the security community.
But
who slapped his wrist about those campaign promises.
You know, truth will out, and I think that if people are curious enough and follow the record enough, I'm sure that eventually these apparent secrets will come out. There are records, and they're kept. And patience, I think, is the byword. And one day, the true story will be known.
We certainly hope so, and that's a good note to end it on. Thank you very much, Tom. We didn't have time to get the hold of Craig, who's been on the line, but time is all gone, Craig. Edwin Slade, thank you very much for dropping in and sharing Oh, a tip of the iceberg of what you know of the UFO. You'll have to come back, you know.
I hope we can continue someday, Bill. Thanks very much for this opportunity.
Stephen Schwartz, next week with me. See you.